This is fun. The FU Network.
I'm Ed the Sock, and this is fun. The FU Network, powered by your support on Patreon.com/FU Network TV, and through PayPal at FUNetworkTV@gmail.com. Drop us a few bucks. Don't be a freeloader. And now, here's your show.
Now, let's listen.
All right, I got with me John Hastings. Now, usually, when a comedian is performing for basically a room of four people, career is on the downswing. But that is not the case for my friend John, who knocked him dead. Well, I guess in COVID times, it's really not a term you should use, but metaphorically knocked him dead, knocked the judges dead on America's Got Talent during his audition, where he did stand-up comedy in front of an empty room, basically an empty room. John, first of all, congratulations, because
Thank you. You
advanced.
Yes, I did. Thank you, Ed. The congratulations are appreciated. If anyone listening right now, keep the podcast playing, but put the video on, even on mute, and just get me more views. Ladies and gentlemen, Ed and I are both in show business. Show business currently, we're all against our will retired. It's all I have. Get me more views on this video, please, please. Just go to YouTube and search John Hastings.
Yeah, that's what you do. John Hastings AGT. Check it out, John. It's John. I mean, everybody needs something to laugh at these days. And John, there are some comedians, John, who thought they were clever at the back of the room in school, and they thought that qualified them as comedians. And then there are those who make it an art form. And when you watch them, you see the difference. I mean, my former partner of years ago, the late Eric Tunney, was the first person I saw in person and said, this is an art form. Good comedy, good stand-up comedy is absolutely an art form. You have to control every facial mannerism, every body language tick, like your vocal intonation, your delivery, your timing, and your material as well. It has to connect it. And that's why you did so well. And that's why I encourage people, check out John Hastings AGT if you want to see comedy that is elevated to what it should be, which is an art form. And that's the last I'm going to kiss your ass.
Oh, well, thank you, Ed. I love an Eric Tunney reference. He doesn't get the love that he absolutely deserved. Everyone, after you watch my video, go watch some Eric Tunney on YouTube, an absolute diamond of Canadian comedy. And I didn't realize that you guys worked together. I only watched your show when your co-host was Craig Campbell. That's who I remember being stood next to you at that little desk.
Oh, yeah. Craig was there for a number of seasons. And then Leanna took over for the final 4 years. It was kind of a joke for a while, because when I started out community television with the show, we didn't pay anybody. And so we had hosts would come, hosts would go. And also, apparently I'm not that easy to work with on camera. I don't know why. I think I'm an easy guy.
Maybe it's the cigar. You never know.
Well, actually, that was a problem, because I allowed the cigar to smoke. When I was on City TV, the cigar was, I could smoke the cigar, and it kept blowing smoke in Leanna's face, and she has asthma. But I also, people don't realize, I worked with Harlan Williams. He was a co-host before Eric.
Oh, wow. So this would have been back.
90.
When like City TV was just, you know, you could get it on Queen West if you were lucky, I assume is when.
This is before I moved to City.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was Harlan Williams. It was Eric Tunney. And then Tim Reichert was in for a bit. And then when we moved to City, it was Humble Howard. But this is not about me. All of a sudden, I didn't have it talking about myself. So how does for a comedian to go out there and put your pearls out there, your timing, because people don't realize when you're a stand-up, you rely on audience feedback. It helps you gauge things. And so this is kind of like a competitive swimmer trying to do their thing in a pool without water. So walk me through how this happens. You get told that you've made it to the audition session, but they're not going to have an audience. What do you think?
No, it's even different than that. So it was the week of, if we all think back to sort of the week around March 13th, 14th, that whole week where it went from on the Monday, this is now made landfall in North America, where decisions are going to be made. And so throughout that week, things are slowly changing. That's when everyone started gobbling up toilet paper. I live in LA most of the time. So I'm there. Things are sort of, people are talking about this is going to be a bit of a thing. Hospitals are slowly bracing for something. There's talk of there might be some sort of quarantine going on, but it's mostly in Italy. It's not a big deal. So on that Monday, I'm going out for pre-interviews for the packaging that you saw on the clip. And at that point, I'm supposed to do it in front of an audience. And then what basically happened is as the week progressed and everyone realizes this lockdown's coming in, they're now trying to race and get every elaborate act on stage as fast as they can. And anyone who is a musician, comedian, someone that is a very easy setup, we're getting pushed later in the week because it's an easier setup for them. And I totally understood it. And here's a trick of show business for all of you listening. Be nice to the crew. It is not their fault. They are taking their orders from someone you're never going to see. No matter how stressed they are, if they are a bit short with you, it's because someone in a tie just threatened their parents. So just take your orders.
Oh, people don't realize what goes on in show business. You know, the phrase that shit rolls downhill.
Well, absolutely.
The crew and people like that shit is so deep they can barely see out of it. And I always say that, you know, Harvey Weinstein, if it hadn't been for the sexual aspect of his harassment, he'd still be there harassing people without the sexual element. He was known to be a horrible asshole. And
absolutely.
You know,
And just as a sidebar, it's my hope and prayer that the last few years where people realizing that bullying mentality doesn't work, it doesn't encourage any better performance. It just encourages a terrible work environment where an attaboy and a yes, please gets you so much further. And so I just kept nodding along and taking, for those of you who don't know LA, I don't drive in LA. I don't like driving. I can't.
What?
I don't drive in LA.
How the hell do you get anywhere? What, but do you set out at dawn with a backpack?
Listen, no one believes me. You can bike LA pretty easily and LA public transport. LA has a subway system. It's just me and a lot of it's me, a bunch of normal people, and some of the most intense crazy people you've ever met in your life, all mashed together.
Do they have more than four stops now? Last time I was in LA, they had four stops on the subway line.
They finally have more because basically they have the Olympics coming in 4 to 6 years, and they are like racing to get a public transport system because, and I'll use a Toronto sort of, imagine Pearson Airport, everyone in Toronto, and the Olympics are being held in Scarborough, and there is no public transport, and they have to get everyone from the airport to Scarborough. They are building basically the Toronto public transport network as fast as they can. So you can get places. You just got to plan ahead. So I'm
slipping out. Sorry, I had to stop you there. I'm still trying to envision the Olympics in Scarborough.
I mean, imagine how awesome that would be, just doing the luge on that weird mini train track they have for no reason.
I'm just thinking about all those variety stores and strip malls that would be living like kings.
Oh, God. And you know, it would be so many just shirtless, vaguely Mediterranean men smoking. The one Scarborough I love because it maintains something that I remember going to Toronto as a kid, is that Toronto was a big enough city that it had stores that you couldn't conceivably understand what they did, and yet they seem to be very successful. Like you'd walk in and there's like four carpet samples and a dog, and the guy has a BMW, and you're like, I don't even think this is a criminal. I think this guy sells dogs. Like what happens here?
But yeah, I think he was a criminal.
Well, yeah,
I'm pretty sure that was a front for I was just watching an episode of Kojak on DVD. There's always gambling dens in the back of dry cleaners and shit like that. Anyway, so you were saying you don't drive.
I don't drive. So I'm schlepping out to Pasadena. I ended up going 3 or 4 times that week, being like, this is when you're going to record. This is when you're going to record. And what that basically did was it took away all of the nerves, because all I'm thinking about is the world is ending. Like in the midst of this, I was supposed to go to Australia, and I do a lot of international comedy festivals. So Alliance started share of my income comes from doing that. And in the process of that week, they canceled that festival. So I'm not even thinking about being on American television. I'm just going, Okay, someone's going to need to figure out how to pay this rent. And that annoying thing about being an adult where you realize, oh, that person is me. I'm going to have to figure this out. And so none of the set wasn't really in my head. I was running around and running it, but it wasn't in my head as something I was worrying about until we got to Saturday, I think it was. I don't even remember. I think it was Saturday. The Saturday when I was, finally, they're like, you're going to do it this day. That's the day that they are shutting down LA. The governor is on television going, go home, get supplies. We're done. Like, we're going in and we're riding this out. See ya in, what, at that time, 2 weeks, and now it's been 5 months. Peace. And I'm sat at the Pasadena Performing Arts Center waiting to go do comedy for no audience. They kind of were like, there is no audience, but they kind of just went, given the circumstances, you understand. So there was all this sort of, because it was so hectic, everything just seemed normal. I don't know if you've been in, it's a very unique show business thing of, you'll get in sort of these cyclones or ciphers of, this should be acknowledged as a bizarre scenario, but I'm in the middle of it, and so there's no leaving, so I'm just going to go, well, this is what I'm going to do. So it only hit me what I actually had to do when I walked on stage, and I'm staring at an empty 3,000-seater venue. The crew is all sat in the chairs because they've taken down everything. I'm the second last act of the show, and then they're wrapped because of the lockdown. They're literally holding drills because as soon as me and the next guy are done, they're coming on that stage. That's coming down. They get to go home. And all I'm just thinking is, well, the crew is sat there. That's more of an audience than the three judges. Play to the crew. You know what you're doing in terms of your set. Just get into the set. And then I got really nervous. And thank God, I was nice to that crew. And the editors and the producers were generous because they definitely edited that first bit before I got into the jokes to make me seem a lot more cool, calm, and collected. Because I remember being a stuttering, nervous mess. And then it went into the set and away we went. So it was one of those things where I totally appreciate your compliments. And I wish I could say it was all an elaborate plan, but it was basically just, I was, to borrow a baseball metaphor, you know, I was playing the field I was on, and we just went from there.
Well, and so the crew, you're smart to play to the crew because the crew's fucking exhausted.
Yeah.
They've had nothing but shit thrown on them. And they're just weary. And so here you come with humor. It's going to, they're the people that are the ones that are going to laugh. They're not professionally guarded. They're jaded, but they're not professionally guarded like the judges might be. And so good for you. You managed to find some people to feed off of. And you got rave reviews from the judges. And I'll tell you that I give you credit also because you went out there and there was Sofia Vergara, there was Simon Cowell, there was Terry Crews, and there was Howie Mandel.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you that if I went out on a stage and I saw Howie Mandel, for the good of humanity, I probably would attack him because I fucking hate Howie Mandel. Because I talked about comedy being an art form. He is graffiti. How people called him a comedian, he put a fucking glove on his head and blew it up until he blew out his sinus. I fucking hate Howie Mandel. I don't know how the fuck Howie Mandel, of all the great comedians in Canada, especially of his vintage, that he is still rising to the top. Fucking Howie Mandel. I fucking hate Howie Mandel. I mean, Simon Cowell's an asshole, but I can respect that. But fucking Howie Mandel? How the fuck is he judging comedy talent? Who the hell made him the judge of comedy talent? How about somebody funny?
Well, I gotta defend my boy here for a second because he absolutely did me a solid on AGT by getting those judges to pay attention to me and give me some love. Whatever you think of his act, that was his act. He has reinvented himself as an absolutely amazing host. And on that show, whatever you think of the glove thing, listen, I never saw his stand-up. I was too young, but I'm a Bobby's World fan till I die, and that cartoon ruled, and he's invented himself as a host, and say what you want. He's a hell of a broadcaster, and he gets the job done, and it's one of those things where, and the other problem is what other comedian are you going to get to be on that show? He kind of is the right sort of vintage, because the thing with that act, as much as it's not Pryor, it ain't Richard Pryor, but it appeals to the middle of the country. And here is the other thing that every stand-up, and I count myself among this, we need to learn, especially moving forward, things are going to change because of the economy. Howie Mandel is smart in that he is pitching it to where there are people that want to laugh, and that is not, sadly, the coasts, and in Canada, that's not Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver.
Listen, I respect what you're saying and your opinions, and you've had personal experience with him. I respect that experience and that knowledge, but he ain't pitching to nobody. He's been pitching in the same place, and things are just moving around, so he manages, it's moved in front of him. And I thought he was a germaphobe. I would have thought that as soon as this thing broke, he'd be sitting there in a fucking hazmat suit with pumped in air from some truck in the alley.
He showed up in a hazmat suit.
You're fucking shitting me, right?
No, it was in the press. I don't know if it was that day, but one of the days he showed up in a hazmat suit.
But as a gag, right?
I mean, I think it was one of those ones where he played it off as a gag, but they were specific. Like it's not even said. You just know Howie is a germaphobe. Don't jump off the stage and try and hug Howie. He's going to give you the red X and you're going to be out of there.
I would have thought that they would have made you guys go through, like in Star Trek, when they come in off the alien planet and they have to go through the decontamination chamber.
It was one of those things where I bet you he was pretty anxious about the whole germ thing. But, you know, there's anxiety and then also a contract with the National Broadcast Corporation. So I have no idea if this is true or not, but I have a feeling that he probably said, we're canceling all of this. And then whoever owns Comcast probably was like, Howie, that's great. We have this contract here, so we'll see you on Saturday. And he was like, you know what, guys? You strive a hard bargain, I will be there, and I will just cover my seat in hand sanitizer. So again, it's one of those things where, and I exactly had the same thought. I thought there would be a lot more of that. Maybe he's got it a bit more under control. Or it was one of those things where, like, there was hand sanitizer everywhere on that day. Like, people were like, every 2 minutes, go wash your hands. Like, it's the only time not to besmirch the beloved crew that I've ever seen lighting guys actually wash their hands. Usually they're just smoking cigarettes near a grip.
Yeah, and they only stand next to the grip because the grip, in comparison, makes them look tidy.
Exactly, correct. And he's got weed.
Now, listen, your comedy is a particular style of comedy. And it developed over years. Now you've got something called dyspraxia, correct?
Yeah, I was born without reflexes. I was born without eye-hand coordination, which affects my reflexes. So that puts me under the spectrum of dyspraxia. So I was born 3 months premature at Mount Sinai Hospital in Toronto. So it's basically the idea, if you throw a ball at someone, instinctively your eyes would say to your hand, block that. I don't have that. I had to learn all of that sort of stuff. Tying my shoes was something I finally mastered at about 29 or 30. So there was a whole element to development that was very different. And again, credit goes to, and this is something that is, of course, going to be attacked in our times of COVID, but public schools and public school teachers identifying the problem and getting me in, and my mom being absolutely amazing and listening and getting me to educational therapy and stuff like that just gave me coping mechanisms. I would never felt to be different. I think one of those really annoying things, and I'm sure you could speak to this as well, people with ADD or ADHD are either cast about as just being, you know, not pay attention people, or there's something wrong with them. It's one of those things where if you think about it like this, it's not that they can't learn, they need to learn how to learn differently. They just are wired slightly differently, and that needs to be addressed across any type of quote-unquote learning disability, which again, I hate that. I don't like that term because it's not that there's anything wrong with being disabled, but it's the idea of it's you got to give people the tools so that they can actually accomplish something. And I think more and more, especially now with COVID and everything like that, there is a lot of just kind of ignoring or medicating those problems. There was a raft of medication that was offered to me that if I had taken would have been absolutely disastrous because it had nothing to do with what was wrong with me. But instead I was encouraged that figured it out this way and given assistance and stuff like that in writing exams. So I have nothing good things to say about the education system in Ottawa. And it's not like I love teachers. Like, I wasn't even a class clown. I was the guy next to the class clown going, take off your shirt, it'll be hilarious. So it's not like I want to be able to be on the side of the educator, but unfortunately, I must.
So you were like the worm tongue, to use a Lord of the Rings reference.
That's a brilliant reference. Yes, you were, absolutely.
You were the
was.
One encouraging them to do shit. That's the smartest thing to do. It's like, I know how to make, you're like a ninja class clown. You make the other person do it. You come up with the plan, make the other person do it. They get in shit, and you just laugh. And by the way, were you suggesting that I have ADD or ADHD?
No, I was just suggesting that you're a human being that lives in the world.
All right. Now,
I mean, you are a sock, so I assume that it's, you know, who knows what learning disabilities happen after you come out of the dryer.
Listen. Don't make me take back that compliment about you being a good comedian.
With hey, listen, you went after my boy Howie Mandel. If we're going to roast battle, we got to go. Hey, Steve? Hey. Damn it.
Now that was just part of your dyspraxia talking.
Yes.
All right. but there you are making an ethnic joke about my ethnicity, about my being a sock. So, but you know, your example earlier about playing baseball, and how difficult, you know, not being able to properly. You could have actually played for the Jays.
Imagine. Basically.
Yeah. I think there's a whole team of them there. Maybe we finally diagnosed it. But and no bad hand-eye coordination. Not so good at video games, I'm guessing.
It's taken me. This is the lockdown is the first time I've ever completed a video game without extreme assistance from my friend Paul Harrison. It was a huge accomplishment because I. Well, lockdown came, and I travel all of the time. I'm going around the world just trying to hack out a living. And this is the first time I bought at 34 at the time, now 35, I bought a television for the first time in an Xbox and just went, well, I'm not leaving these four walls until they figure this out. And so I played an inordinate amount of Red Dead Redemption 2, which, as it turns out, that therapy really assisted me because I was able to calm that horse and shoot a couple of bad guys.
I would recommend, by the way, one of my favorite games, Gears of War.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. That's everything
Gears
I like.
Gears of War, I don't know if it's an exclusive to Xbox or PS. All I know is Gears of War. Great. I'm not a gamer, but Gears of War, love that game. And there's many of them. Unlike Halo, they ran a few good games before they started to suck.
Okay, good.
Yeah, no, they're definitely Gears of War. And now, do you ever get pissed off that dyspraxia sounds so close to dyslexia, and dyslexia gets all the attention? Like, that sucks, man.
Brother Ed, I even have a bit about it, because that's what people think of. I have dyspraxia, and they think I'm just mispronouncing dyslexia, not to quote a bit, but I can read fine. If you throw a book at me, then I'm fucked. No, it absolutely drives me crazy. It's also one of these weird things where you say you have something to do with reflexes, something to do with eye-hand coordination, and people come out of the woodwork to be like, that's a thing I have, like, that happens to me, I can't catch a thing. And I'm like, yeah, go talk to someone to get it figured out. Like
they could just be spastic.
The problem is some people are dolts. That's the other problem. And the other thing is people sometimes don't believe me because I've gone through and learned how to cope with it. So, you know, about 60% of the time I can catch a ball. I don't look graceful doing it. I could probably make the Jays starting line based on what happened last year. So, but you know, that's not impressive. It's not the Mets. It's not the Expos. So.
And the Expos haven't been around for a long time. And I mean, still not them.
Exactly. And the Expos should come back. And I don't believe in conspiracy theorists, but the MLB manipulated that strike to keep the Expos out of that 94 World Series. That team was unstoppable. And that entire team went to the Mets and they became a dynasty. It is a travesty. They should shut down the Jays. No, that it's the last thing that bat throw was very fun. Bring back the Expos, get rid of the Jays. Toronto doesn't support it. Montreal needs something.
Well, the Jays now this year will be playing in the U.S. They're playing in Pittsburgh.
Is that where they're going to put them?
Yeah, Pittsburgh, because Canada won't let them go back and forth and to play, you know, play their games. So the Toronto Blue Jays will be in Pittsburgh, which is kind of a change, because usually American companies come up here to shoot TV shows and they make Toronto into Pittsburgh. Or Chicago or New York. Instead, now Toronto is going to be Pittsburgh. I don't know. Pittsburgh's going to be Toronto. But the thing about you not having physical reflexes does not dull your mental reflexes. Because I watched that bit you did at the comedy club in L.A. when Dennis Rodman was crowd. Now, I understand he was supposedly heckling. But the clip I saw, I didn't hear him heckling. I saw you just comedically dismantle him in such, it was beautiful. It was like the Sistine Chapel of how to deal with assholes in the crowd. It was beautiful. And I know that you didn't have that material prepared because you didn't know, you know, oh, well, Tuesday, Dennis Rodman will be an asshole in the audience. Oh. You had to prep that shit. Backstage, you had to get, because I've had to do this too, where you have something planned to do and then circumstances change and you have the opportunity, I'm just going to ignore what's going on or I'm going to take it head on. And I encourage people, after they check out John Hastings' AGT video, check out John Hastings' Dennis Rodman, because, oh my God, I was laughing my head off. That was so great, the way you just shut that guy down.
Well, here's what happened. I picked a fight because, and you've done a lot of live performance, and also being a sock, I have a feeling that some people also will look at you like a target. And I'm at the Comedy Store in the Belly Room, which is a room that maybe sits 50. It's 50 people, and you're jamming the last 20 in with KY. Like, it is tiny. And Dennis Rodman is off inside, and he's heckling every other comedian. And the thing with LA is, and this isn't a knock, this is just people are assuming that anyone who has been successful in any aspect of show business, which sports is, they have some power. And I'm sitting there going, I've got a bit of a career in England at this point. I have a Canadian passport. I can go work for Yuck Yucks. I'm lighting Dennis Rodman up. This is crazy. This show is not going to continue. And I walk up and I just picked a fight with him verbally.
Beautiful.
And the thing with it was, I'm a pro wrestling fan, and he's done a lot of pro wrestling. And I knew that if you go basketball, people are going to go, yeah, we know rebound kick. But wrestling's stupid enough that people will go, oh, yeah, he did do that. The scary part of it was, and it's heard on the recording. Unfortunately, the videotape doesn't exist. Someone has it.
It doesn't need it. The way you guys have put it together, it doesn't need it because the audio's clear.
But the thing is he comes on stage, and what you can't see is he grabbing me by the back of the neck. When he, in the video, he says, can I say just one thing? Can I say one thing? Mm-hmm. And at that moment, Dennis Rodman, who up until that point went, oh, this old drunk. Like, you've been around sort of faded stars. They're with a to quote Doug Stanhope, they're with a trophy wife, but it's a bowling trophy. Like, it's not my line, but it's the perfect description of this very particular type of person. And he comes on stage, and in that moment, I went, oh, there is a very thin layer of booze flab. And then this guy is steel. Like, if I am not careful, he's gonna rip my fucking head off. And I just went at him, and thank God he laughed at himself, because there was a moment, and I could see it, the audience didn't see it, but I could see him looking out the corner of his eyes of his sunglasses, of going, making the decision whether or not he wants to be in the newspapers the next day. And after looking back on it, if he had beaten the shit out of me, that's even better. That video is almost at 100,000.
Yeah, no, you should have. If he had beaten the crap out of you, that would have been a star maker immediately.
Oh, my word.
If Ryan Lochte can get series after series, then you can certainly get a series as the guy who Dennis Rodman beat the shit out of. That would have been awesome. What did Ryan get back there?
I mean, this is the thing. I would love to know if he even remembers the situation.
I wouldn't want to try to climb into Dennis Rodman's head to imagine what he does and does not remember. But it was beautiful. And yes, I have been in circumstances with celebrities, big and small, where you see their eyes and you can tell they're not too sure if they're going to go with it or if they're going to make trouble. I had a situation with Anthony Kiedis, who's an asshole, who were doing the interview. And this is, nobody told him he'd be doing the interview with me, just that he was doing an interview with a much VJ. And then he shows up and it's me. So I have a little bit of sympathy for him, but fuck, I talked to people, you know, bigger than him, especially at the time. They were huger than him, and they loved it and kept coming back. So doing the interview, and he's just slowly answering, slowly. And finally I said to him, you want to hit me right now, don't you? And the pause was just too long for him to convincingly sell the, no, man, afterwards. It was very much a, yeah, I do. And then he's calculating in his head whether it would be a good idea. And then he says no. So, yeah, I know when you're a comedian, you have to guess that. And you mention the dyspraxia, and you mention that you grew up with different set of experiences. And this is why Canadians do well in the United States, for example, because Canadians grew up absorbing American culture, but not part of American culture. So we've got that ability to be observers. And here you are with a different experience growing up. So you're able to, an extra layer of observers, because you're apart. So you're able to observe everybody else from a perspective that other people don't have. Am I right?
It's absolutely, I prejudged a sock for not being so absolutely succinct and be able to sum up a situation. It's also a huge ability of, I've lived in a lot of countries. I left Canada in 2012 and moved to the UK, and leaving and going to somewhere like Britain, which seems like it would be so similar to Canada, but is actually so different. It really trains those sort of muscles, because you spend a year not knowing what anything is. So you got to kind of clarify and absorb everything in, and then sort of vomit it back out in the world. So it's an absolute, that's an absolute key thing that I think comes from broadcasters and comedians are both very good at. They're getting enough of everything to seem like experts on a variety of subjects, and also for the purposes of using it in their job. Like I have, you know, you and I both could go to a pub quiz and be absolute devils, because, you know what Anthony Kiedis' birthday is, and not for the life of me could I tell you what that was. And
no, I don't know what it is. I don't see, that's the thing. People assumed I was somehow fascinated with these celebrities.
Oh, no.
People would say, who have you interviewed? And I'd have to really think, because like once it's done, it's done. I don't give a shit about these people.
I mean, it's one of those, I never would have said you were fascinated with the celebrities. I was more just going on the basis that there might have been a packet of info handed over to you.
But like that's, I read it?
Yeah, that I was about to say. It's like, wait, no, I worked in radio. Yeah, no, host.
Oh, radio. Oh, my God, radio's the worst. Every time we would send information to radio people about anything, the first question they ask when they get you on is, so Ed, what's going on?
Oh.
They didn't read a damn thing. And
I was a producer for a morning radio show. No one believes me this, but it was literally like the tension between all of the hosts on some days was, you could see it. And it would literally be this. This is in a commercial. I don't fucking think you fucking know how to fucking act. And we're back. And there was no communication between anyone. I'd be there at 1 a.m. prepping, knowing they're not going to look at any of this and then be confused. Oh, it's crazy.
They're the laziest fucks on the planet, and they're in an industry that is, it's dinosaurs after the comet hit. And they still, it's like, so Ed, what's going on? It's like, and then I just led into them because they're fucking lazy. But then I shouldn't have done that, because while I did do research for celebrity, like, you know, some basic research for celebrity guests, if bands came on that were not big, and I made them wear name tag stickers because I didn't want to bother learning who was who. So,
all right, let me, not to interview you, but let me just ask, what band did you do that to that turned out to be huge? I'm going to say, if I can guess, I'm going to say Slipknot. If I'm doing the comedy math, in my head, if you're meeting Slipknot, you're going, these guys are a one-hit wonder at best. I'm not going to need to learn their names. Put on the name tags, you boiler suit-wearing losers.
The truth is, none of the ones I did that to ever really got more than one hit. I couldn't even remember. Tell
oh,
you,
that's even better.
That I it was think just... it was one of those boy bands from Florida I did it to. What the fuck were they called? I don't know. Some, you know, harmonic douchebags. I don't know what they were called, but... nobody I ever did that to ever had more than one hit.
That's so, even better that you were literally able to just go, yeah, I'm fine with this. This isn't going to be a blow, but I'm not getting called into that weird part of the Chum building where it all smells like cat.
None of it smelled like cat, but there were areas that allegedly smelled like pussy.
Hello.
Hello, allegedly. You're working around the world. You mentioned you lived in England. You work in the UK. You work in Australia, and you're not, you know, you're a homeboy. Yet you have to travel around the world to make a living as a stand-up comic. How fucking tragic is it that we have such good talent here, such strong comedic talent, but if you want to do something frivolous like eat, you got to move to other countries. You got to apply your trade elsewhere, because even in a country as diverse and as big and as broad as Canada, who Canadians love comedy, except apparently in Chilliwack. But that's another story. You can't make a living as a stand-up comic in our own country.
It's one of those things where I break it down to there's a bunch of villains involved, but the big one I will always push is that the CRTC and CanCon and the CBC get attacked by every time there is a conservative government in this country, and they use them as a scapegoat and a punching bag for everything, and that bleeds into every other aspect of show business because it doesn't look like a worthwhile investment. Because if Peter Tithead or Jimmy Bag of Bibles ends up the prime minister, they're going to cut all the funding and that trickles down everywhere else. So it's one of those things where people need to actually make the government shore up the CRTC rules. The government needs to take an active understanding that that is a huge boon for tourism. Where the Jim Carrey is from here. Dan Aykroyd is from here. Dan Aykroyd still, he lives outside of Ottawa, I'm pretty sure.
He makes vodka in a crystal skull now.
Yeah, he makes vodka in a crystal skull because even he can't get a gig on CTV. Do you understand? Like, and it's just one of those things where it drives me crazy. Going to Australia was incredibly frustrating. Just for Laughs has been amazing to me. They are a great organization. The Canadian government's treatment and use of Just for Laughs, when Just for Laughs came up for sale a couple of years ago, the Canadian government should have done the smartest thing, bought it, used it like a crown corporation, and built tourism around that. And I know some of you are going, that wouldn't work. That's what they did in Australia with the Melbourne International Comedy Festival. It is the second largest comedy festival in the world. And because it's owned by the government, they can use their tax dollars to promote Canadian talent and put them on the same level as American stars, British stars that you would know from other places, so that Canadian people can stay here. And I know a lot of you are going, this is a frivolous thing to care about during lockdown, but it's not, because that means the money is staying in Canada. That means that crew members aren't working on American shows. They're working on Canadian shows. Schitt's Creek is the hit of the lockdown, and that is a Canadian program. And I hope to God in that dark tower on King Street, the CBC is going, people actually care about what's going on in Canada. Let's pump out some more interesting shows.
That's on Front Street.
Or either way.
Well, listen, the CBC, okay, first of all, yes, every time the conservatives have effectively poisoned the water, because there is just this weird blowback against paying money to the CBC, as if, because our nearest place to compare to, the U.S., barely puts any money into PBS. The government doesn't. And they don't need to, because they have a giant, robust industry. We do not. Our industry is the equivalent of a lemonade stand that doesn't have any cups. And so there's this notion of, why are we paying money for, if our programming is good, it will stand on its own. No, it fucking won't. Because the U.S. has a marketing juggernaut that buries us, and when you look at, like, every Western country has supports a public broadcaster, and when you look at the level of funding, there's like a list of 16 major countries that do it. Canada is second from the bottom as far as the amount of money they invest. You know, BBC is a very robust, respected organization. It's government run, but in Canada. I mean, okay, for a long time, the CBC made shit on a stick, but so did everyone else in Canada. For a long time, the CBC didn't tell us about Canadians. It told us how to be Canadians, you know, the correct way. It's not that way anymore. They make things like Schitt's Creek and Kim's Convenience. They make good shows. Now, the CRTC are a bunch of fucking cowards, because instead of making companies stay with their license, like Sports Network or Much Music, they told them, everybody, you don't have to stay to the terms of your license. You can run anything you want. So Sports Network could run tap dancing for all that, or CSI. It doesn't matter. And then they told the companies, at the company's request, that they could take all their money and put it into only primetime shows. So they make these pablum cop shows and pablum medical shows that are really generic, so they can sell them around the world and make their money back, because they're starving, because the broadcasters are starving. I can't blame them. But if they're not going to put any money into the smaller shows that run during the day, the ones that have more personality and more connectivity with people, then we're going to get is shitty cop shows and shitty medical shows. Not that they're actually shitty, but that they're not any better than we get from the States. They just have less personality. So it's a bunch of shit. And I dealt with CBC. I dealt with CBC about a year ago now. I thought I was dealing with their digital people, their sitcom people, and their radio people. And we all had separate conversations. And then all of a sudden, one day, I got an email that included CC, everyone I was dealing with, saying, no, no, Ed DeSoc. And there's someone there who hates me. Even though I'm fucking Canadiana, like apple pie is American, and they're the Canadian broadcaster, and I've defended them to the hilt, there's still someone there who hates me. And that trumps good programming. So fuck them, but I love the CBC. I love the concept of the CBC. I love the concept.
I completely agree, and I think that it's one of those things where the CBC is at a crossroads right now in terms of what they need to do. The CRTC needs to stand up. What has happened with, and I'm not just saying this because I'm on with someone who used to be a mastodon, something like Much Music with the Comedy Network, all that sort of stuff, it's just unfair, and it's hobbling to the performers and the people that are in Canada because they see no hope and they're going to go do something else or they're going to go somewhere else. And that's one of those things where it's just crazy because in the end, they could have their pick of some amazing talent and stuff like that. It just, something needs to be done. I don't understand the attack against the public broadcaster. I don't understand why people aren't more supportive of the CBC. I understand they can be an incredibly infuriating organization to work with because in the end, putting show business and government bureaucracy together is kind of like freezing molasses. It's going to move slow and it's not going to make any goddamn sense. But something needs to be done. ACTRA needs to maybe grow a pair and actually stand up and go, you can't run non-union things. We shouldn't have producers involved in our committee. We actually need to do some stuff. Like, there's a bunch of things that can be done.
Yeah, even when it's going to happen. And the reason, to answer your question, the reason that there's not support for CBC, there's not massive support, is that CBC does a really shitty job of advocating for itself, of explaining itself. And that's why they don't do a good job making a case for themselves. And so the people just look at them as that place that ran Hinterland Who's Who. And and you know what? A digital series, sort of lampooning, like a behind the scenes of people making Hinterland Who's Who, that would be hilarious. And it would be very Canadian. And why they're not, everything in the States is rebooting because they know that people have an existing emotional connection to certain characters and TV shows. Do they do that in Canada? They reboot Street Legal, a legal show from the 90s that no one gave a rat's ass about. It ran 6 episodes and went away. Meantime, Littlest Hobo, for fuck's sake. You know, there's so much shit.
Yeah.
There's so much we could do. Return to Danger Bay, Beachcombers. There's so much that could be done.
We're not returning to Beachcombers. Listen, I am young enough that I don't have this nostalgia for Beachcombers. I don't know why everyone loves Beachcombers.
I would do it as a comedy now.
Oh, I mean, I think they unintentionally did it the first time as a comedy.
Yeah, I hated it. I could not stand watching it. But it's a Canadian property that has a name. So just reboot it and make it funnier. Make it like Canadian Baywatch. You know, make them beachcombers, but they're running along the beach in slow motion.
I mean, they should just do it. They should just do beachcombers at that nude beach on Toronto Island. Because the fact that everyone doesn't talk about how there's essentially... there's Dong Beach, 20 minutes, a 40-minute swim from an airport where everyone in Toronto, no one talks about, but everyone has a story of going there and getting teased in a bush, if you know what I'm saying. Like, it's just,
I've never been to Hanlon's.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, there we go.
Oh, he knows what it's called. No, my friend. The last thing I need to see is people who think other people should see them naked. I've been on tons of porn sets. We used to shoot comedy bits with them. And so I got no problem being around nudity. It doesn't even titillate me. But you go to these places, like, I remember once at the All About Sex show, going to a booth to talk to people who was a swingers community. And I looked at them, and they all looked like they were humanoid squids. And I was like, why? And they were talking about sex, and I was actually getting sick. I do not, just because people walk around naked doesn't mean that other people should see them naked, nor that I need to.
But you still knew what the beach was, because everyone always goes, "Oh, I've never been," and then they know the exact name. I'm just saying.
I know what it's called, so I don't wind up there by accident one day and temporarily lose my vision. But you know, the other thing is about Canadian talent. You were on an American show, Okay. Yeah. You were on America's Got Talent. You did amazingly well. You earned people's respect. And now you're getting attention from Canadian media, where you know damn well that just as John Hastings, the comedian who's hilarious, you wouldn't get the attention.
Yeah, it's the shame of it all. And again, I actually do see the point of, well, there's a story there and that there was no audience. Sure. But at the same time, it's the unfortunate thing, and we were talking about this a bit off air, all the media and the newspapers and all the outlets, all of the free weeklies are gone or reduced to cinder. And that's a real shame because I left Toronto in 2012, and I have a big soft spot in my heart for Toronto. But the Toronto that was cool and interesting and went against all the stereotypes of a stuffy, puritanical, Presbyterian city didn't exist then. It was a vibrant thing, and media covering the arts and culture was a huge part of that because people knew where to go look for it and knew where to go find their scene. And that doesn't exist in particular in Toronto at all anymore. It's just a city of condos and like weird yuppies being yuppies talking about hummus when they should be not talking to me. You know what I'm saying?
Hummus. You know, you nailed it there. It's also a lot of gentrification where in businesses where they take down the signs that have been over top of other signs, and they have like the original sign for a butcher from that was there in 1930, and they leave that sign up even though the store is not a butcher shop, but they just think that there's something kitschy and ironic about it, and I want to go there with a sledgehammer.
I want to scream at everyone. Kensington Market, when I lived there for 3 years, it was awesome. It was a stinky jewel in the middle of Toronto. It was fun. It was weird. Their Chamber of Commerce was so strong. Starbucks tried to open and they stopped them. They kept everyone out. They finally got a condo in there. Through the condo, they got a grocery store and it's gone. And I hate, as people get older, they turn into that sort of like, well, in my day. But I blame those developers for turning me into this on this subject. They fucked that neighborhood. That was like an interesting, cool place, a place for young people to go somewhere cheap. It's fucking irritating. People are going to be impressed with Vancouver again. And that needs to be stopped, Ed. No one should like Vancouver.
I agree. I like people in Vancouver.
Of course.
But I don't blame the developers. Because, you know, the story of the scorpion and the frog, developer's going to develop. It's the people that sell them the land and the people that zone it for them. Those are the people that I blame. Developers are going to develop. That's their business. But if you don't let them, if you don't zone for them, they've got to go someplace else. If nobody sells them the property, they got to go someplace else. I mean, fuck, Honest Ed's is gone. And it's now, they're building a giant condo. It destroyed Mervish Village, a nice little community. And, you know, there's a lot of people that pay lip service, like a lot of wealthy Rosedale types that pay lip service to the wonders of Kensington Market. But ask them when the last time was they were in Kensington Market.
Hey, got news for you. They also weren't welcome there. They didn't need to go to an Army Surplus store that also sold churros for no reason. And they were not welcome. Like, it's one of those ones where... It's that I completely agree. Like, and even what's so weird is you nail, this is so Toronto-centric, but you hit the nail on the head of it's Rosedale and Summerhill being like, oh, you know, Kensington, it's just so wonderful. And I was like, you never went there. You went to Yonge and Eglinton and were upset there was a pickle barrel there. Like, stop. Like, don't ruin our fun just because you don't get it. Go take pills in the afternoon and go to a yacht club and stop bothering everybody.
Indeed. And maybe that's a good place for us to round it out.
Yeah. Just before I go, social media is at the John Hastings on all platforms. And go watch me being heckled by Dennis Rodman or me heckling Dennis Rodman, depending on your perspective, or me on America's Got Talent. Just search John Hastings, comedian, on YouTube. All of that will come up.
I was going to say all that anyway, John.
Well, you can say it too.
I'm not like a radio guy who tries to end the interview before you can get in your licks, before you can get in your promos.
And I was just talking to Anthony Kiedis, and he has a couple of things to say.
Fuck that guy and what he does to socks. The John Hastings?
The John Hastings, yes.
Okay, Hastings. The way it sounds is the way it's spelled, and John with an H.
Yeah, baby.
All right, at the John Hastings, and that's on... Twitter? Is that on Instagram too?
Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Hell yeah.
All right. Check it out. And you know that I don't steer you wrong, audience. I wouldn't tell you something I thought was funny unless I thought it was funny. I would tell you if it was shit, you know, like I did about Howie Mandel. But
I do not stand by Ed's position on Howie.
I take full responsibility.
Thank you.
You had no part in that. you defended your boy very well.
But, although if we could get sued by Howie Mandel, that for no other reason than to go into the high court and the plaintiffs rise to me, and then they have to go dredge up that desk in the basements of the Chum Building for you to appear in court as Ed the Sock, that would almost be worth it.
There's no more Chum Building. It is now occupied by CTV, and that desk, we burned it. and the hot tub, we sold for charity. Somebody in Kingston has it. So check out John Hastings. Look it up. John Hastings AGT and John Hastings Dennis Rodman. I guarantee you need a laugh. There's enough laughs for days. That's all I'm telling you. And not saying that just because John's here, because if I didn't think he was funny, he wouldn't have been here. So, Johnny, you're sitting this out in Montreal right now?
Certainly am. Yeah, I'm weathering the storm in Montreal. It's a long story, but my wife still lives in Montreal, even though I live in L.A. We're going through some visa issues. So luckily I had a place to retreat to. So, yeah, I'm going to go.
And what's the next step? You made it past the auditions. What's the next step for you with AGT?
You're all going to have to keep watching to find out, ladies and gentlemen. That's all I can say, but please keep watching and please keep the support coming my way.
So it has been, you have shot the next step?
All I would say is keep watching and we all will be answered very soon.
I understand.
Please keep watching.
I understand. It's a non-disclosure agreement. All right. keep watching and see how far our boy John gets. Not John boy. That's a whole other story. John, thank you for taking the time and John with me about this, that, and the other thing. And best of luck. No matter what happens, the outcome of AGT, you got your footstep, you got your attention. I hope that takes you further. And I know that in Canada, you know, in the States, somebody gets attention. They say, hey, let's give this guy a sitcom. In Canada, somebody gets attention. They say, hey, let's find an American and give him a sitcom. I hope it takes you further. I want to see more from you. And wishing you the best of luck.
Thank you very much, Ed. This was an absolute thrill. Good luck with all of your endeavors, and thank you so much for your time.
All right, everybody. That's John Hastings at the John Hastings. Check him out. I'm Ed the Sock. This has been Sock Talk. And remember, rather be a smart ass than a dumbass. All right, talk to you again.